next presenter is BJ Bonin. BJ has 25 years of experience in geology wells and municipal engineering projects. His expertise lies in well construction, well field development, geological mapping, and mineralogy. He's currently a support hydrologist with the Minnesota DNR. Thanks for coming, BJ.
I'm BJ Bonin. For those of you who know me, you're probably wondering, how's he going to fit something that'll only take 20 minutes when I can talk for hours on this? So for safety's sake, I think everyone here should buckle your seatbelts. This is going to be a fast ride. Okay, drilling deeper through a vertical feature won't work. This is what we're talking about here is Split Rock Lighthouse Campground, DNR Park up in Lake County, up on the north shore of Lake Superior. It's roughly halfway between Duluth and the border. You're dealing with several unique features of the lake and the rocky headlands that the lighthouse is situated on. And it was decided several years ago that the campground should be expanded. And over the course of the meetings, the first team meetings regarding the water supply for this campground, it was brought up as, well, yeah, we'll just do some water supply. We just need 2,000, maybe 2,500 gallons a day. And, you know, where's the best spot to get the water from? And I pointed to the lake and said, there. And they said, no, we can't do that. And I'm like, well, good luck. So meanwhile, the red area here is the camp. Can you see that? It's not showing up. Okay, that red square is the campground expansion. The lighthouse is on the shore where those blue lines are coming out of the red square. I was thinking this thing was going to work, but it's not. So, water supply. Lake, well, you know, the lake, wells, first of all, we probably all know this here, that groundwater specialists and well construction specialists are a lot like first responders. Everyone likes to know they're there, but no one really wants to call them, right? So, you hear this a lot, like I heard on this project, well, well's just a hole in the ground, how hard can it be? Well, we're dealing with trying to find water out of snapshots of wells and maybe some outcrops or even some previous mapping efforts, geophysics, what have you. It's a lot harder than it looks, and that even goes for professionals, right? So in this case, a failure is a relative term. You know, it's not necessarily a failure. It's really hard to do. So this geological setting up here is a lot different, a lot closer to Hawaii than it is the Twin Cities area. You're dealing with crystalline rock versus sedimentary rock. You're dealing with fractured aquifers versus porous media flow and even secondary porosity in some of these things. The park was looking for maybe 10 to 20 gallons a minute. And like I said, 2,000 to 2,500 gallons a day. And then there was also the additional problem of salt water. Salt water in Lake Superior, this is from Sea Grant in Duluth. Salt water is actually a big problem up on the north shore of Lake Superior. Which is really interesting, seeing how close you are to the largest body of fresh water in North America. But like I said, this area has a lot more in common with Hawaii than it does the Twin Cities. You're dealing with a calcium chloride brine that's up to 30 to 40,000 or more parts per million calcium chloride in that brine, and also up to 5,000-6,000 parts per million boron, For water supply, you're looking for the freshwater lens that sits on top of the brine and trying to avoid the mixing zone in between that's brackish, and definitely avoiding that salt water, especially for a park. A lot of these wells are flowing wells, so you really do want to avoid getting a flowing saltwater well coming out of here and having to deal with that. So for water supply here, if you're not using the lake, you want to look for horizontal flow regimes and not vertical, and you want to avoid using borehole storage. Because drilling deeper in a fractured aquifer doesn't, first of all, you're never going to get out of it if it's vertical, in which case the salt water is, and you run the risk of hitting a fracture that will then convey brine into your storage and wreck everything. So here's the site. Here's the topo map. I don't think this thing is showing up. Is it? Nope, it's not. Okay, I conveniently pinpointed the lighthouse on the map there, and also where the three wells were eventually drilled. What you notice on this topo map, there are three different things: that there's a big lake, that there's a lot of contour lines, and that the right half of the map looks different than the left half of the map. Okay, so there's a geological reason for the on-land portion. So let's take a look at the geologic map. Just like any kind of complicated scenario, the data sources were split down the middle of it. The map on the right is the 1990s vintage geologic map from the Beaver Bay Quadrangle that had a cross-section. And the map on the left is the more recent GIS version. And, of course, they didn't use the same color scheme. So if you want to go with a failure, I don't know if that's a failure or not, but it's something that if you read the map, it's easily remedied. So what to note here is that the maroon color on the right side and the light blue on the left side is the same unit. That's a Beaver Bay diabase. That is a dike. It is a vertical feature. It came up from the depths and cut through all the other stuff, which is a roughly horizontal lava flows. And so taking the cross-section from the Beaver Bay Quad, you can see that vertical feature right where those two arrows are, and that is actually the closest representation that I'm going to come to what Split Rock Park is. The high ground on Split Rock Park is that vertical feature. Drilling through that, you're not going to come across anything different. You're just going to get more of it. And again, for a saltwater aquifer, you don't want to have vertical flow anyway. Now, what this also shows is that the lavas that are on either side of that are layered, horizontally layered roughly, and they are just past the narrow vertical part of that dike. So taking that to the site again and using it something that's a little bit more engineering friendly, the dike at the park forms a letter F that I've Can you see that? Yes, you can. The orange lines show the letter F, right? That is a vertical feature that forms the highlands that are of lower amplitude or closer frequency than the ones that are lava, that are where the hills are spread out more. And also you see that there's also lavas in between the prongs of the F. So those are your areas where you have vertical features and horizontal features. And this has implications for your water supply. But notice where the wells are. They're in the vertical part. Another thing to notice is that there are some flat areas in between the hills that don't have streams on them. That is the best place to find water in this area. You look for sand and gravel because that's not going to be too deep to get the brines. It's also going to be hard to find because the bedrock is at the surface. So you're going to have a very difficult time finding sand and gravels up here. It's also a limited reservoir. But there is lots of recharge, which can then cut both ways because everything goes into that. And here's what it looks like. This, you're going to be like, what's that? Well, that's rock. This is the ophitic basalt in the park that weathers to pea rock. Ophitic is a textural term that when the lava starts crystallizing, the crystals will form like little snowballs. And these are more resistant than the rest of the lava after it hardens. And so you will end up getting pea rock coming out of the rock as it weathers. Now, moving away from the lakeshore, where it's harder to remove all the little bits of gravel, you can see that the basalt is weathering into little crumbly bits of gravel. Now, if you find one of those flat spots, it looks like this. Very loose, gravelly, sandy material that absorbs everything and even makes footprints. It's nice and easy to build on. Your wells that you can build in here, if there's water there, again, it's not a guarantee, are not going to be saline, and they're going to be easy to build because they're going to be very shallow wells. So the next best source of water for this park, not using the lake, is the horizontal rock, which in this case is all lavas. There's no interflow sandstones that I saw anywhere near here. You're looking for horizontal fractures. This is a fractured. You're gonna get all your water from fractures. Nothing out of porosity here, and your yield is going to be pretty low. You're looking at 5 to 10 gallons a minute tops. More realistically, 1 to 2 gallons a minute. If you drill too deep, this will also have salt water in it if you go too deep. So what does that look like? Here's a road cut right outside the lighthouse driveway, entrance onto Highway 61. And you can see that this lava has very, very well-developed horizontal fractures roughly along the flow boundaries. So moving right along, here's another one down by the lakeshore. This is basalt over andesite, and you can see that from a distance, this is what, probably 20 feet tall? You can see that there's a big fracture in between that contact. Now, finding these contacts while you're drilling is going to be very difficult, even if you know what you're doing. But here's a close-up of that contact showing that there's horizontal and vertical fractures at that contact. So if you can actually find a contact in here, you pretty much have to be on site or ask your local driller, and it can be done, and it actually does provide decent water supply. Now, the last resort is the vertical rock, the diabase in an orthosite dike that makes the campground desirable for a campground, right? So there are very few fractures. The fractures I saw were all vertical. I did not see any horizontal fractures in there. They're all very small. It is the most resistant rock in the park. Now, it also makes it the ideal place to put a park and the ideal place to put a water storage structure if you're going to do a gravity feed water supply system for this park, which is why those wells are put there. So let's take a look and see what this looks like. This rock is so resistant that it doesn't necessarily support soil. This is the diabase portion. There are fractures. They're vertical, and they're all very small. Again, a quarter for scale. These are roughly 2 feet long. Tops. The outcrops I saw did not see any horizontal features at all in this material. Even all the little dikes and veins were all vertical. Here's the anorthosite. It looks like pavement. Really looks like pavement. The glaciers only scratched it, didn't even crack it. So this is a very, the wells in this feature, because it's a vertical feature and with vertical fractures, your recharge area is going to be really small. It might be really fast. But it also then hits that brine underneath. And so you run a risk of drawing that up as you're pumping. Anything that goes on in that campground is going to go through these fractures into your water supply. So you really have to be careful where you put things and who spills what up there. So the three wells, I'm going to go really quickly here. The top line there is the water level. These are the only aquifer tests that were done on these wells. They're only pumping tests. They're just specific capacity. The red line, that's the second line, is the top of the pumps. The third line there, which is light blue, is the water level of Lake Superior. And the bottom line is the bottom of the well. Now, this particular well pumped at roughly 14, 15 gallons a minute and recovered at 10.3. Water quality is halfway decent. So this is a success story. The well was put in a bad place and the driller actually found water. But the question is it sustainable? Is it safe? And you know, all of these wells are flowing wells, and you can see that this one, it took about an hour to recover to flowing status, but is that going to, you know, what's that going to be in the future? Seeing that this is the first well and we have just enough water for the campground using this well, we got to go and do another well for a backup supply. So here's the second well. This one pumped down right to the pump bowls, which were set even deeper, and it took only about 15, 20 minutes to get there. Then it recovered at 10.7 over several hours. But the worst part is, look at they drilled it a little deeper and look at the boron. 1.4 parts per million. There is no official MCL for that, but the recommended for health limits is 1. Look at the iron on this one, 6.9 parts per million. This water flowing out of this actually left a little soapy deposit on the outside of the well casing. This is not necessarily a useful well unless that water quality improves. So they drilled a third well. This time they went even deeper. This is a 500 footer. They set the pumps even deeper, and they succeeded in getting rid of the iron, but the specific capacity of this well is even lower than the other one. And the chloride is up to 120 parts per million. This water from this well actually tasted slightly salty. So the driller managed to drill three wells and avoid the brine, mostly, and managed to get one well's worth of water supply. And what does that mean for the campground? Well, it's still on hold. These wells were drilled in 2011, and they've been wrestling over whether or not it's practical to finish the campground ever since then. This is still ongoing. The DNR project manager is trying to retest these wells to see what can be done with them and if the water quality's improved over the last several years, and then try to figure out how vulnerable they are. Even natural contaminants, you know, brought in, you know, Giardia, Cryptosporidia, or whatever, can infiltrate down into this. And so they're also worried about lack of water treatment in the funding for the plan. So the takeaway from this is there's a hazard to be made for cookie cutter approach. Cookie cutters are useless if you're making malts. You got to tailor your project to the site and not try to do what you've always done, because clearly Split Rock was a lot different than the Twin Cities. And test first, test, because the easiest way to find something is to look for it. So thank you, and I'll take questions if I have time. I wasn't 100% sure as to why they didn't do that in the first place, but all the water supply for the park currently is from wells, including some that are very salty. The question. Kelton asked if the lake is looking more attractive now. And the answer is yes, but. I think it was a political or even a permitting decision not to use the lake. The wells at the park are currently all wells and not lake water. Although I did suggest using the lavas closest to the lake so as to actually draw through those horizontal fractures and call it groundwater and say we're good. But no, they drilled it at the top and tried to drill deeper through the vertical feature and end up with salt. Next. Yes. The flat areas where the gravel is that outside of the park boundary. It is the answer is in some places it is. The biggest areas were outside the park boundary. But there were small areas, and if you want to go and delve into that area, you can see that the lavas dip at about a 20 to 25 degree angle, and the Flatiron Hills, the Sawtooth Range out there, if you calculate the dip slope, those are all at 25 degrees or 21 degrees. And so where that levels off, you can infer that that's where gravel is. And that's there are no streams, so it's probably infiltrating. But the problem the engineers had with that one was that then you had to drill your wells there and then pump the water up the hill to where your distribution system is ideally set, situated. So they didn't want to do that. And there's some really good reasons why you wouldn't do that, because it's all hard rock. How are you going to bury that pipe? You don't necessarily want to leave that just laying out. So, okay, well, thank you. My time's done. You can unbuckle your seatbelts. I think it'll be slower from here.
Thank you, BJ.